This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Jurassic Parts, an airy enclosure and set collection tile game from the mind of Kevin Lansing and illustrations from Andrew Bosley. Be sure to check out their Kickstarter now through February 12th.
Hello and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and joining me as always is a man who Bear Grylls has said does some disgusting stuff. It's Ryan Gutowski. How are you?
Well, it's only because Bear... This is such an awkward story. I was at an airport, and Bear Grylls was also at the same airport. Mm-hmm. I came walking out of the men's bathroom, and he just looked dead in my eyes, and he said, "You disgust me." Man. I don't even know what I did to him.
Did you wash your hands?
Well, not after that.
I mean, like, after you were leaving the bathroom, did he, like, know that you didn't wash your hands? Is that what the problem was?
No, he looked at me while we were in the bathroom.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
And then I was so upset that I couldn't wash my hands.
Oh, okay.
And I haven't washed my hands since.
Oh, that's awful. Remind me to never touch you, ever. Yeah. Or eat food that has been anywhere close to you.
Yeah. Anyway, traumatic experience meeting Bear Grylls.
Yeah, as they all are.
Anyway, Rick, how's it going, man?
No, good enough. Good enough. Just,
good
you know,
enough. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, you know, just trying to wrap up this weekend and get ready for the week, I guess. You know, recording this podcast with you is obviously a chore, and it destroys me each and every time, but I do it. And, you know, just trying to get it over with and then, you know, move on with the rest of my day. You know,
it's kind of like spending time with family at Thanksgiving.
Oh, you know? Man. Yeah. And all the family members got mad.
Just power through it.
Yep.
Anyway. So, Rick, we always start the show with what you've been playing. So, Rick, tell me about what you've been playing.
I have been playing Blue Moon City, which...
That's the Reiner game.
Yeah,
from back
it was
in the
at
day,
CMON.
Right?
Yeah, we played it at CMON Expo.
I did not.
Fancy.
You did.
Oh, yeah, I did. That's right. I'm cooler than you. No, played it at CMON, and I liked it. Had a good time with it. Didn't finish, you know, did it like a demo. But then I brought it out at school thinking it's a fairly basic game for what it is, but... weren't able to get through a round of it. And then at our board game meetup that we do in Clarkston once a month, I played it yesterday. And so that was a really good time. I played it with Adele, our buddy, she's on our Slack channel and always drops
some nice insight
from time to time. In Blue Moon City, you're basically... all working to reconstruct this city that's made out of different tiles that you lay out at the beginning of the game. And in the center is like this big obelisk is the main thing that you're trying to recreate. So on a turn, you move to a spot and then you play cards that have numbers on them in order to put a disc of your player color onto the location based on, you know, the number. So I play a card that has a 2 and a 1. I can put a disc over a 3. And so you're going around, and anytime that all the spots on a certain city block get filled up, you get rewards, usually in the form of crystals and dragon scales. And dragon scales get you more crystals. And then you use those crystals to help rebuild the obelisk. And the first person that rebuilds it 5 different times, or it depends on how many players are playing, but wins. And the cards have different powers on them and stuff, but it's pretty basic. For like when you look at the game, it's got a lot of beautiful components, really cool artwork, you know, some cool little minis that you move around that make it feel like it's going to be more complicated, but it's really not. You just move and play cards. So it's a good time. Our major complaint with the game is the color scheme. There's like in the game, there's like a brown, a black, a gray, and a red that are all like seem to be almost the same thing. And so especially when we were playing, the light wasn't great where we were, and so it was really hard. Like I had to get 2-3 inches away from the game and sometimes even hold up one of my cards to make sure that it matched the color that I was trying to play.
Okay.
But apart from that, it's a pretty good game and I like it.
What's the setting for it? It sounds like it's probably something futuristic, but has this old, like, vibe to it.
Yeah, it's like future. You're supposed to be, like, in the future, I guess, in an old ancient city of the city of Blue Moon. But basically, it's been destroyed, and you're doing stuff to kind of recreate the city and bring it back to life. So it's That's pretty cool. It's got, you know, some strategic elements where, you know, if you reconstruct a part of the city next to a part that's already being reconstructed, you get more bonuses. And there are certain things that you can do to be more strategic, but it's nothing that's like, you know, you're going to set up 8 to 9 turns ahead. You can probably think 2 or 3 turns ahead and then, you know, kind of, but quickly go through turns, you know, nice little game to kind of pass the time. It's one of those where you can still kind of talk while you play, you know, and it's a little harder to get analysis paralysis with.
That's cool. That's excellent. Very cool. I wish I had played it. I'll have to sit down and play that with you next time we get together.
Yeah, so. You can be my friend.
Yay! In good lighting so we can see the pictures.
Yeah, be my friend in good lighting. Yep.
So I've been playing Rome. I've played quite a bit of Rome. This was a Kickstarter project from Red Raven Games. And so if you know anything about Red Raven, they created... Ryan Lockett created Megaland, which we
Ryan Lochte, enjoyed. The swimmer?
No. Ryan Lockett.
Oh, Ryan Lockett. Not Ryan Lockett. That's a very different person. I got you.
Very different people. He's not a swimmer.
Okay. I got it.
He's an artist and game designer. Red Raven has made Near and Far and Megaland and a couple others.
Above and Below.
Above and Below, which I love. Near and Far sits on my Islebound, which is a really good one.
I'm just going to keep throwing them out there from now while you keep trying to talk.
So Rome is a smaller game than some of these other ones that we mentioned. It's an area control game, and it's very, I like it a lot. Like, this is a game that has become a go-to for us. What you do is you set out this area. The premise of the game is that all these people have gone into this trance and they're roaming the countryside and kind of in this haze. And you're going out, your team of 3 colony people are going out and trying to find some of their community and get them back home. And so you are roaming the countryside and trying to find these people. The board is set up by setting out 6 cards. Each of the cards have 6 squares dividing them, divided up into 6 squares on each card. And then each character that you control actually sits at a specific place on the board. So you've got the square board, and I'm coming in. Let's say I'm coming in from the north side of the board. Well, all of my people have search patterns that I can only lay down according to how I'm looking at the board. Okay. I can't mirror it. It's basically polyomino sized pieces, and I can't mirror it. I can't turn it, shift it, whatever. And I've got to put my search pattern down. When an entire card, all 6 squares on the card have been filled up, that card is flipped over, and the person who had the majority of a color wins that card. So I'm playing yellow, you're playing blue, I have 4 squares on it, you have two squares, I'm going to get the card. The card adds a colony member to my group, and then it also that new person has a new search pattern that I can utilize. The game is easy to teach. You've got some coins. You can buy artifacts throughout the game that help you and do some different things, give you some different abilities. Victory points are awarded by the people that you pick up. So one person may have a really, really simple search pattern that only has 1 or 2 tiles, and they may be 3 or 4 points. But then somebody else may have a really complex, big search pattern that gives you a lot of control, and they're only worth 2 points. So you kind of have to, there's this happy medium of not getting too many small valued people and going for a good diverse group. I really love the art. Ryan Lockett's art is amazing as always. If you like any of the other games that he's done, same situation, beautiful art, great attention to detail, really cool little stories. You'll pick up a card that is a new community member that you found, and it'll say so-and-so was sharpening his sword in a cave or something like that. So it gives you a little tiny amount of flavor text that's kind of funny about what that person was doing when you found them. So it's a really cool game.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it sounds... His games always kind of have like a whimsical feel to them. And, you know, you feel like you're able to immerse yourself in that universe pretty easily. So Megaland we really enjoyed. With Megaland, I think I really enjoyed it, but then felt like game-wise, I don't know. To me, I can compare it to Space Base, and I like Space Base better just because it kind of has that Machi Koro kind of thing to it. But this sounds like there's not... I don't know. It doesn't sound like there's any games that are very similar to it, so it might kind of have a lasting power.
I think it does, because I think what's original about it is the fact that you're clearing... The landscape's always changing. As you gather up these people, you're now clearing out another space on this map that's in front of you. So now you have more space to kind of do bigger moves, bigger search patterns and stuff like that. I really enjoy it, and I think it would probably be my go-to area control game because it's portable. It's not in a big box. We play it during lunch at work, so we can fit into about a 40-45 minute time frame. So it's a very, very good game for families and people who just game with two people. Aaron and I have played Rome two or three times, I think, just the two of us, and it plays really well at two. So
awesome. Well, Ryan, that is what we've been playing, and you know, we could talk forever, of course, about the games that we've been playing, but we've got some other stuff to do in the show.
That's right.
So I was lucky enough to reach out and talk to Kevin Lansing, who is the designer of Jurassic Parts, which is on Kickstarter right now from 25th Century Games. And we've gotten to, you guys got to live stream it a while back. And so we sat down and talked a little bit about his game design process and kind of some of the work that he's done. And then we got him to join us and do a little bit of Know Thy Shelf. So on the other side of this break, you'll be able to check that out. So stick around. All right, welcome back to the podcast. So I am fortunate enough to be sitting down. Well, I'm not sitting down with, that would be a lie. I'm sitting on a computer with, and on completely opposite sides of the city. But with Kevin Lansing, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, so we wanted to sit and talk with you because you have a game that's on Kickstarter right now. And, you know, it's something that we've been excited about. We got to live stream a playthrough of it a few weeks ago. But yeah, can you tell us a little about your game?
Yes, it's called Jurassic Parts. It's a set collection and area control game that plays somewhere halfway between a filler and a full game, all in a short play time of about 30 minutes.
Awesome. So what kind of was the creative process for you in getting this, bringing this game to life? Like, what kind of sparked your idea and kind of led to what it is, you know, now on Kickstarter?
It wasn't kind of a linear process there. I was just kind of ping-ponging, chaining one idea to the next. It's even more so than usual. Just found its identity. This game probably started more as a abstract, where I was just exploring the ideas of building around the on the edges of the playfield instead of like on the hex tiles themselves. I think I must have looked at a Settlers of Catan map and thought of, hey, I could make another game with that, because you place the roads and they go around the hexes. It's nothing like Settlers of Catan at all.
Right.
But it kind of looks like it when you set it set up on the board. Just from the core mechanics, once I knew I had something good, like fun, that this doesn't suck, I got about to thinking about what would be a good theme for this. And paleontology just struck me as something that's, you know, interesting. Like, every kid grows up liking dinosaurs. That just struck me as a really interesting and appropriate theme for the mechanics. And then I was calling it Fossil Hunters for a long while. Apparently, a video game came out with that title, so I'm like, okay, I need a new
those
name.
Jerks.
What can I call this? And my wife suggested Jurassic Parts, which I was like, can we do that? Is that too close to the movie? But you know what? It's a perfect name. I love it. So we just went with it.
Yeah.
Chad Elkins, when he picked it up, was like, no, it's great. And so I credit my wife for the title.
Well, and this is kind of, you know, you are best known, I would say, for Flashpoint Fire mm-hmm. Rescue, which came out, was published in 2011. And, you know, you kind of had, you know, the expansions of that and, you know, some different things. But it's been a while since you've had, like, a full game release. So what's it been like to kind of get back into that role when it comes to game design?
All right, you're making me feel really inadequate. It has been too long. You know, I never
No, not off, the intention, not the intention, not the
yeah,
intention.
Yeah, I have kind of fallen off the... I really wanted to apply myself, you know, get out a game every year, be, you know, be like my heroes, like, you know, Vlado Chvadl and Reiner Knizia, but, you know, life happened, and I never stopped playing games, and I never stopped designing them. That's something I've just, like, consistently worked on in the background. But I am, like, 100% interested in exploring, like, game prototypes and ideas, and I just have no interest in self-promotion. So I make myself go to these, you know, the odd game convention, as long as it's local, you know, not too, you know, disruptive.
Right.
And I make myself talk to people, but I'm a shy introvert, and I'm fighting every instinct to do this, because I know, hey, I can make some good games, but I need an agent to yeah. go talk to people for me, sign all the contracts. I'd be perfectly happy just making the games and never, you know, never talking to anyone. But that's not how this business works.
Well, and I mean, like, it's not like the first game you made, you know. I think about people and, you know, their first few game designs are kind of these kind of small little games that are smaller published. Maybe not as many people have heard of them, but like Flashpoint, everybody I know in the kind of board gaming community seems to know about that game and seems to have it, you know, hold it in very high regard. I mean, what is it like to know that, like, this thing that people really have a lot of respect for, like, yeah, I made that. What's that like?
I mean, it's pretty amazing. and Flashpoint actually isn't my first game. My first game is, you wouldn't have heard of this, Taco Judo, the timeless sport of octopus wrestling.
Oh, man, I apologize. I didn't dig enough, deep enough.
No, you didn't check out my
board game. I just needed to press
game.
The next button on the designer page. God, mm-hmm. I'm running behind.
So, yeah, that was a game I entered for a contest
mm-hmm.
Because I was plugged into the board game designers forum, and I was, you know, kind of lurking there regularly. And I found this contest, and I willed myself to enter it and won. And that was another game that came about. The mechanics were there, and I just thought, like, I've got these eight pieces orbiting this one bigger piece. It's an octopus.
Yeah.
So, moving on to Flashpoint. That game also kind of sold itself. I sold some copies on the gamecrafter.com. Mm-hmm. I was feeling like a small-time success story, because I think I sold, like, 42 copies of this game at a time when, you know, That was a big number, and I guess one of my copies found the Travis at Indie Boards and Cards, and he actually contacted me out of the blue. I'm not really good at selling myself or my games, but sometimes my games are so good they sell themselves.
Yeah, there you go. That's awfully handy. Yeah, I mean it's crazy to think. I don't know. I can't imagine something like that. Like, you've made this, and yeah, it's sitting on GameCrafter, and then all of a sudden, you know, a few years later, it's a big deal with, you know, expansions out the wazoo and all this stuff. And, you know, it's awesome. So yeah, congratulations on your success with that. Is there more Flashpoint to come in the future? Or do you think that's kind of a property that you're ready to move on from?
I think I'm ready to move on. From a business standpoint, maybe I should just, like, milk this thing for all it's worth. just really go into remakes and sequels, and that's how Hollywood makes all its money, right?
Right.
But
yeah.
I don't know. I guess I'm just a creative. I want to, you know, follow my passion, and right now I'm moving in so many different directions. I just hate to sit still, and relive past successes. So I make it a personal challenge, and I wear it as a badge of pride that every game I make is going to be something a little bit different than anything I've ever done before.
So, I mean, if you've got that, I guess that means we're not going the path of, like, Pandemic, where you're going to have Flashpoint Iberia and Flashpoint, you know, Legacy, and, you know, we're going to, looks like we're moving away from that. Or maybe we pass the torch to somebody else.
I'm really impressed with Legacy. I'm just really interested with the Legacy concept. Pandemic obviously was a huge influence in, especially Flashpoint. But I got to admit, I haven't played any of the other ones. It's just, it's like Pandemic. Yeah, I did it. I did that. I played that game. And and I'm ready to move on. So, no, I don't really have that much interest in continuing to make Flashpoint expansions.
Well, I mean, I know we're really excited about Jurassic Parts. It's, you know, we, you know, have been pretty good friends with Chad for a while, and so it was exciting to hear him talk about this game, and we had a live stream of it, and it looks great. So, I know I'm on board with the Kickstarter. I mean, if somebody's out there kind of on the fence thinking, you know, should I back it, should I not, what are some of the things that you think a gamer will really like about this game that they might not find elsewhere?
Well, a gamer will like that it feels like a full game. It doesn't feel like a filler in spite of the short play time. Also, and this is just me personally, even though I am, you know, a quote-unquote gamer, even though I do, you know, go to those game stores and play those big meaty Euros, I realize that most of the people around me, my friends and my family, are not like that. So I think I designed Jurassic Parts subconsciously as a game I could introduce to my non-gamer friends, and they would get a little bit of a sense of what, you know, I'm passionate about, these, you know, deep strategies and player interaction, without, you know, feeling overwhelmed and thinking, oh, well, wait, how many hours does this take? 2, 3, 4? I don't have time for that. Everyone has time for this, so it's very easy to get in a playtime. Either make that the focus of your evening, or maybe like you're going between this and that. Hey, I've got a half hour to stick around, so let's play Jurassic Parts.
Well, and the theme is cool. The artwork is great. I'm really excited about this.
Knock that out of the park.
Yeah, I mean it's a good game to look at. So yeah, I'm excited to see this. Campaign's running, you know, when this gets released, so folks, we hope you'll check that out. But kind of to wrap this up, one thing that people have been really enjoying from our podcast recently is our Know Thy Shelf segment. So, you know, I might not hit all the questions that we've asked before, but I wanted to ask you a few questions to see not just who you are as a designer, but also as a gamer, and maybe as a person. Who knows what kind of doors this will unlock? Who knows? So I guess if you're ready, our first question is, what was the first game in your collection? And you can say this from childhood, or you can say your first hobby game, however, whatever sparks in your mind.
Okay, first game in my collection. Well, you know, it's probably Magic the Gathering. Like a lot of people, I was one of those guys who, you know, really got into Magic at my school, went out, bought the booster packs and the expansions, and, you know, I never went to a tournament. I was just happy just playing with my friends. And that, I think, the really awesome thing about Magic that was just kind of blew my mind was that everyone could have a different deck. Every new set introduced new mechanics, and it just felt like this, not just a game, but a universe that continued to grow and develop. I've, you know, kind of fallen off that bandwagon, as have, you know, a lot of my friends, but, you know, from what I understand, that's still going strong, and that more power to it.
Is there a big box somewhere in your house that still has all those cards sitting around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just can't bear to get rid of them. I mean, some of them are probably worth a lot of money, but I've just never, they got sentimental value.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to pass it on to the next generation, too, you know?
That's right. I got a 2-year-old. In like 10 years, maybe he can play with me.
Yeah, exactly. But don't touch the cars before then. They need to stay in good condition. All right. So next question, what is the most recent game that you have added to your shelf?
Well, this one's cheating a little bit because it was Space Explorers, and actually Chad gave me that one.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, if you're not familiar, it's kind of similar to Splendor, but with superpowers, I'd say. you got the space exploration theme, and then you've got instead of every color of gem, you've got, like, you know, your testers, your astronauts, your physicists, and then they all have little powers that it just feels like Splendor Plus. And my wife loves Splendor. I love the replayability of it, and so that's proven to be a really good acquisition.
Yeah, I'm a fan of that game as well. Yeah. Excuse me while the dog decides to interrupt this podcast. You're being very rude. So what about the game that you've had that's a game on your shelf that's unplayed, that has been unplayed the longest? So, like, you're the longest resident of the Shelf of Shame, maybe.
Ooh, okay. That would probably be, I think it's called Doomtown. I want to say it's a card game. I think it's for two players. Kind of got a Western vibe. It looked pretty cool. I found it on the Red Dot sale at Barnes & Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, honey, to my wife, Sarah, do you think we'd want to play this with things? She's like, yeah, that looks really good. And we got it. And it's still in the shrink. And neither one of us has played it. And as I said, we have a 2-year-old, and he keeps us very busy. So it may be that, 2, 5, 10 years before we decide to get that a shot.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll hang on to it. Is there a game that we like to say that you're ready to get rid of off of your shelf? Something you feel like we need to sell this or give it away? We just don't want it there anymore.
All right. Well, I'm conflicted about this one. Because it's probably Cosmic Encounter. I personally think there's something like beautiful and unique about Cosmic Encounter. Again, about the fact that it's so replayable. Every game, you got a different mix of aliens. Their powers completely break the game in fun and weird ways. My wife hates it because it's like this weird, like, poker match, and nothing makes any sense, and all the rules are broken all the time. So it's like there are no rules. I know I'm coming around to her way of thinking, and anyways, if she's not having fun, I'm not having fun. I think that Cosmic Encounter is going to have to find a new home.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Some people are probably screaming at the podcast right now, some Cosmic Encounter fanboys and fangirls, but no, sometimes it just doesn't vibe with people.
It's a game I respect a lot more than I love, unfortunately.
There you go. There you go. What is a game on your shelf that you will never get rid of?
Ooh. Okay, well, I am a sci-fi nerd. You know, I cut my teeth on 4X strategy games like Master of Orion. Yeah, I know, that's a computer game. So for me, I have this sentimental attachment to Eclipse. It feels like a light 4X strategy game, which is really not saying much because it still takes like 4 to 5 hours to play through. But when you compare that to something like 3 to 5 hours, when you compare that to something like Twilight Imperium, you realize that's a super light, super streamed down empire building game. Still awesome. Too long for me to get on the table very often, but I just look at it and I'm like, I want to be playing that game.
Totally. Yeah, I know my one of my friends, his birthday wish each year is to get a group of people together to play Battlestar Galactica, because he knows it's not something you can just sit down with. It's a favorite of his, and he's like, this is how I make sure I get to play it, by scheduling it once a year to break it out.
Yeah, they're rebooting that one, apparently.
Yeah,
not the game, show.
Oh, well, maybe that will follow soon, is a reboot of the game, who knows. And so our last question would be, what is currently your favorite game that's on your shelf right now?
Okay, so this is maybe a weird answer, but it's certainly the game that I've played the most recently, and I've enjoyed every playthrough. It's super light. It's not very terribly deep, Camel Cup.
That is a good game.
Yeah, I mean, it's short. I guess, you know, like Jurassic Parts, it's the kind of game you can put in front of gamers, you can put it in front of non-gamers. Everyone's having fun. It's just, it's just very accessible to everyone.
Definitely. Yeah, it's one of those where you finish and people are like, wait, that was it? Like, I was expecting this to take twice as long. Like, you're like, no, we're done. And they usually want to play again right after. So, mm-hmm. Do you play expansions or no?
I haven't yet. I know the expansions are driving me crazy a little bit because for a long time we had this debate among our gaming group. Is it Camel Cup or is it Camel Up? The right. The font and the logo, you know, left some ambiguity there. And then, you know, we finally decided, you know what, it's Camel Up. We've decided it's Camel Up. So what do they come up with? They come up with an expansion. It's called the Super Cup or something.
Right,
it's just adding fuel, throwing fuel on the fire. Now I'm not sure about anything anymore. Is it Camel Up? Exactly. Is it Camel Cup?
One of the great controversies of the board game community, is it Camel Up or Camel Cup? And, you know, maybe we need to reach out and find out. I know it has an official entry, but, you know, you can't have that bad of artwork on the front and expect us not to be confused. Again, thank you so much, you know, for joining us and talking to us a little bit about Jurassic Parts and, you know, your work in the board game industry. And, we're not that far apart, you and I.
We've
seen each other, I think, in passing at some game fests and things. So hopefully, we'll be able to play some Camel Cup up sometime soon.
I look forward to it.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. And for you listeners on the other side of this break, Ryan and I will get up to some sort of weird hijinks with the last section of our show.
Well, Rick, it is a new year. We're a month into 2020, and we are starting to look at some of the games that are coming out this year, games that we're going to see at conventions, games that people are going to be bringing to Kickstarter, and Kickstarters that are going to fulfill. And so we had a couple games that we wanted to talk about that are going to come out, that are going to hit the market this year. So, Rick, why don't we talk about, there's a couple Kickstarter fulfillments that I was planning on talking about, mostly Kingswood and Kohaku. And it's funny because Kohaku is from Gold Seal Games, Andrew Smith, and then Kingswood is actually from 25th Century. And if you've been paying attention lately, Gold Seal Games announced this last week that 25th Century is actually going to be bringing Kohaku to retail, which is really, really exciting. But both of those are going to hit stores in 2020, and I'm excited, really excited about both of those.
Yeah, Kingswood is Henry Audubon, who made Parks, which was, you know, a huge hit last year, and I really enjoyed it. It kind of has a similar feel to Parks or Space Park, even. I got a little bit of a vibe of that from it.
Some of the movement, yeah.
Yeah, and so it's a really fun game, and those are well-made games from some folks that, you know, we know that are local, and so, yeah, I'm excited about those. But Ryan, you've also got some expansions for Unmatched that you're excited about.
Yeah, man. Unmatched is a game that I, like, even when I'm not playing games, I'm thinking about playing Unmatched. That's how much I enjoyed this system.
We're worried about Unmatched, you, by the way. Yeah. We're thinking of having an intervention soon.
You're going to have an Unmatched intervention?
Yeah.
So, only if we get to play.
Right. Okay.
So, Unmatched, we've got some expansions. There's going to be, I believe, two Jurassic Parks expansions coming out in 2020. And then I think in the spring, second quarter of 2020, we're going to see Cobble and Fog. Cobble and Fog is going to be, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, it's Sherlock Holmes. It's going to be Dracula, the Invisible Man, and one other person, and I can't remember, but I'm very excited about this. I'm interested in seeing.
Can't remember, but don't know.
I don't mean, know I, what What else?
So excited. You're so excited your memory's not working.
Yes. I'm really excited about these new characters hitting the scene and seeing what they bring to the game, because especially the Invisible Man, that's going to be I'm sure that there's going to be some opportunities where you kind of disappear into the landscape, kind of hide from your opponent. So I'm interested in seeing what these turn out to be. I'm really pumped about these unmatched expansions.
Can Invisible Man just be like no minis? It's just, oh, they're all invisible. Like,
yeah, or it's just a stand. You just move around a little quarter size stand.
That'd be fantastic.
You know? So that'd be so good.
Ryan, you know, I'm a fan of Tim Fowers, and Fowers games are pretty awesome. And Burgle Bros 2 comes out in 2020, and
that's awesome.
Super excited about it. It's going to have all the games. It used to be with Burgle Bros, you can buy like a stand to set it up because it takes place on multiple levels of a building. Burgle Bros 2, it comes built into the game, and like the components kind of fold up and like make a table, and I mean it looks nuts. But it has you robbing a casino instead of like an office building. I really like this like universe. Burgle Bros, I think, is one of the best game like systems out there, and so it's something I unfortunately don't get to play enough, but it's one that I am looking forward to the second time around. So Burgle Bros 2. Definitely something I want to check out.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And then for me, another one that just the title catches you is So You've Been Eaten.
Yes.
It's a Scott Alms game, but it's basically you are a deep space miner. You've been eaten, and you've got to get enough crystals to meet your quota and then work to get out of the beast. The other thing that's really weird about this is that it's a game for 0 to 2 players.
That's so weird.
I don't know what that means. I guess the game plays itself. I'm not really sure how that works. But I'm definitely intrigued just by the title alone, and something I'll have to check out, I believe.
Yeah. The box art really intrigues me, and I don't know anything about this, but I'm very interested in checking it out.
Definitely. Yeah.
So what about Tiny Epic series has been a big hit. I know we've got a couple Tiny Epic games. What about Tiny Epic Dinosaurs? This is on your list.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have never played any of the Tiny Epic games.
Really?
Is that crazy?
That is wild.
Yeah, but Tiny Epic Dinosaurs looks intriguing to me. Tiny Epic Mechs came out a while back, and I was like, that is really cool what they're doing with meeples and stuff like that. This one just, I don't know, dinosaurs and like making your own Jurassic Park kind of situation seems to have become a thing in games lately. And Tiny Epic games tend to be really well done. So, I mean, to me, it's kind of a very low risk situation. This game's probably going to be pretty good. So it's one that maybe this is going to be where I step in and finally join the Tiny Epic series.
That would be cool. Yeah, definitely. I've got another expansion to talk about. Architects of the West Kingdom, Age of Artisans. In 2018, Architects was the game that Bob was singing the praises of. And this year, Paladins has kind of taken its place. But their coming back, Garpil Games is going to be releasing Age of Artisans, which is an expansion for Architects. And I'm interested in seeing how it changes the game, what it adds to it. I like the artistic bend that they seem to be going with, that class of people in the community. So Architects of the West Kingdom, Age of Artisans is one to watch out for. I think it comes out in March or April, I think. And so that's an expansion that I'm going to be watching.
Yeah, definitely. We were talking a little bit about Kickstarters, and there's a couple that you and I, we actually covered that I'm looking forward to their retail release. Composition is one, which is a deck building word game, kind of like a paperback.
You were really impressed with that game.
Yeah.
Like, I remember you telling me about how much you liked it.
Yeah, the artwork on it is really fantastic. And I think, the way that it's crafted, if you enjoy paperback, hardback came out and it was like, a different way to play that game. If you've got the audience that plays these types of games, I think Composition is one you should totally check out. And then Faza was a game that I played that is a it is a cooperative game, kind of has a pandemic style to it, except it's you are humans on a planet that's slowly being taken over by these aliens, and your job is to go around and, you know, try to keep yourselves from being destroyed. That's a really bad summary of it, but I like it a lot. I think it plays more simply than like Pandemic. I think also, you know, some people might be kind of pandemicked out. This is, to me, kind of that same itch where, you know, the first time I played Pandemic, I was like, this is a cooperative game, and, you know, it's so complicated and stuff like that. This is one of those that I think you can have that same impact on people that maybe don't have as many games, that they're not as used to cooperative games. The artwork is really cool, kind of has a comic book sci-fi feel to it. F-A-Z-A, Faza, is something I think folks should certainly check out.
And we've got a preview of it on a preview from the Kickstarter of Faza, and so it'll be hitting 2020. It'll fulfill and hopefully hit retail or be able to buy online. So check that out if you're into co-op games. So, Rick, we both have a games about bees on our list. Mine is Bees from B. That's B E E Z from Next Move Games. This is the next one in, you know, everybody knows Next Move from Azul, the Azul series. And I loved Reef when it came out a couple years ago. And Bees is kind of the next next one in this series of family based games. It looks really beautiful. You've got these big bee, like plastic bee toys that it almost looks like they're going the route of something like Echidna Shuffle, where you've got these really cool toy looking pieces on this honeycomb grid. And so I'm really excited about checking out Bees. That was announced last week that it'll be they're going to debut it at Origins this year. So that's going to be one that I'll probably jump online for as soon as I get there.
Yeah, there you go. Well, mine is Honey Buzz, which is from Elf Creek Games, which did Atlantis Rising, which was really caught my eye last year. But yeah, in this one, I'm seeing that it's got like pieces that you place that are honeycomb, and you trigger actions. It's worker bee placement, as they describe it. But I'm really just kind of captivated by the artwork. It's really beautiful game, and so sometimes, yeah, I definitely judge a book by its cover, but even like a cursory glance at how the game works, I want to know more about it. So, yeah, Honey Buzz is one that I passed up on the Kickstarter, just because you can't fund everything, but it's one that I'm hoping maybe 2020 we'll be able to grab a copy.
Nice. So two Kickstarters that I wanted to talk about, Zombicide Season 2, second edition. I'm hoping that I'm excited about it since I did back this one. It'll be hitting at the end of 2020, but I've never gotten into Zombicide. I've always wanted to, and I feel like it was the right time, with all the rule changes, with the adjustments, streamlining some of the things that people have critiqued over the years. And I feel like this is probably my time to get into it. So Zombicide second edition went with the Kickstarter, and it'll fulfill at the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to getting tons and tons of minis, and hopefully it is a fantastic game.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it will be tons of minis. If not, you can have like target practice with a BB gun or something.
That's true.
Yeah, there
you go. Most expensive target.
And what was
practice?
The other Kickstarter that you're excited about?
Oh, Wonderland's War. I believe I am excited about this. I don't know much about it. This is from Druid City Games, or I think Skybound Games. This is going to be coming out on Kickstarter this year, and I think fulfilling by the end of the year, I think. But Wonderland's War looks really good. I love the art style that they're going with. I think this is the Eisner Brothers are doing this one also. So Wonderland's War is one to keep an eye on. I think February 11th is when the Kickstarter launches. So I don't know if I'm going to back it. I know for a fact that I'm backing less Kickstarters in 2020. I just have to. I can't back everything. And I think I stress myself out sometimes trying to back everything. So I'm being very particular this year. And I'm only going to back certain things, and we'll see if this one makes the cut. If not, I'll definitely check it out at retail.
Well, here's hoping that, you're able to snag a copy. A couple more for me. Top Gun strategy game kind of scratches that same itch that Big G Creative kind of hits for us sometimes.
Yep.
I love the description. You are... strategically maneuvering planes to coordinating with their weapon systems operator. And so basically you're trying to get a lock on your opponent. But then the best part, being Top Gun is a mental challenge as well as a physical one. When they aren't in the air, pilots will face off in a volleyball card game in which they strut their stuff to gain rewards or intimidate an opponent. That's one of the greatest sentences yes. I've ever read out loud.
Yes.
So that alone, I don't know that I have, like, high expectations of quality, but, like, I will be playing this game at some point.
Well, I think I saw it. I saw somebody playing it just before, I think it was the week of Christmas. It hit some store shelves. So you're probably able to find it. I've seen it in some people's pictures of Walmart. So you may be able to find it at Walmart.
Well, you know I'm going to go shopping now. So
I know.
I don't know why you did that. You want the whole podcast to grind to a halt. Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, you found this. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
The Baker Street Irregulars. So this is the fourth one, as far as I know. We have a third one that's still in the plastic wrap. Just Ooh. Takes a little bit longer to play that game, and so we haven't seen it hit the table quite yet, but
okay.
That is, you know, a high-quality game that we really, really like. And so I'm sure that we will be getting our hands on that at some point.
Very cool. My game of 2018 was Welcome To. And this year in 2020, we're going to see Welcome To New Las Vegas. So I'm looking forward to seeing the new added complexity that Welcome To has brought to the table. I'm pumped to see what this one's going to look like, since Welcome To is still one of my favorite games out there. Definitely one of the best flipping rights in existence. And then Parks Nightfall expansion. It launches on February 4th. This is going to be an expansion for Parks, one of my favorite games of 2019. Henry Audubon made this game, and the Nightfall expansion adds some slightly new mechanics and some nighttime scenes and some things like that. I'm pretty pumped about that. More art, more good stuff, and of course, Keymaster Games is behind it. So,
yeah.
Parks Nightfall expansion is probably one of my top things I'm going to be looking for in 2020.
Yeah. Another one that I just caught, I didn't write it down, but Our Travels is one that we were excited about from Origins, and that's going to be hit in 2020. I love the theme there, and I think it's one that I can get Sarah excited about as well. So there's a lot of stuff. As we go through this list, you know, you and I have found a list of stuff that's coming out 2020 that we are very excited about. And, you know, we didn't have the time to kind of talk about everything, you know, obviously, and we didn't get to talk too in depth, but, you know, we wanted to have this on the show so that you can, you know, maybe if some of these things, their brief descriptions catch your ear, then, you know, go check it out yourself. See what you think.
Definitely. Very cool. Well, Rick, thanks for sharing this night, hanging out, talking about games with me on the podcast.
Very welcome.
Now, Rick, let's say somebody tuned into the podcast just now. Let's say they stumbled into the room. They heard us talking. They say, these two gentlemen that are talking about board games, I'm interested in more.
I like them.
I like them. I want them to be my friends on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You can go to oneboardfamily.com. You can check out, we've got a blog, we've got a podcast, we've got videos, we've got previews for Kickstarters, we've got other things. I just wrote a blog on healthy habits of the game table that was a pretty big hit. It's just some tips about gaming and having some healthier habits, you know, things we eat and put in our body and stuff like that. pretty cool feedback from some of the people who have read that. And then we've also got a Patreon. So if you like the stuff, like the content that we're producing, you follow us on social media, you say, you know what, I've been listening to the podcast for a while, consider backing us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/oneboardfamily. We've got a couple different tiers, and actually in 2020, we're going to be introducing maybe some more tiers or revamping some of them. So be sure to check it out at patreon.com/oneboardfamily. And Rick, until next time, we will see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.